Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, we open our show with an international story with local impacts, the Iranian attack on American military bases in Iraq in retaliation for the U.S. killing of an Iranian general. Then, on our Capitol Report, we'll have details on what the resignation of Congressman Duncan Hunter means for residents of the 50th Congressional District and who's lining up to run for the seat. The Cajon Valley Union School District has filed a countersuit against school board member Jill Bartow, accusing her of harassment, a claim Bartow says is untrue and made in retaliation for her speaking out as a whistleblower and filing a civil rights lawsuit against the district. County health officials are warning about a spike in flu cases in the last week, including two more deaths from influenza. We'll have details. AB 5. A bill signed into law and authored by Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher of San Diego is aimed at cracking down on the gig economy, but it's having a devastating impact on many sectors of the California economy that relies on independent contractors. And it's prompted several lawsuits, including one filed by freelance journalists that will be heard later this month right here in San Diego. On Crime Beat, hear about another sexually violent predator proposed for release in Jacumba Hot Springs in rural East County. And learn about a warning for parents in the Alpine area about a stranger in a truck stalking middle school students. La Mesa police are seeking witnesses and the identity of a pedestrian hurt in a crash near Grossmont Center. In Lemon Grove, a man threatening suicide was shot and seriously injured by three sheriff's deputies after he reportedly pulled out a gun. Lawsuits against the San Diego Catholic Diocese have been filed over alleged childhood abuse by several now-deceased priests, including some who served at parishes in East County. A proposed ballot measure aims to bring a new approach to solving the homelessness crisis in California, and we'll have details. In Julian, SDG&E is undergrounding some utility lines to help keep vital facilities open during power outages. Hear more on today's show. On People Power, learn about efforts to help the family of a 6-year-old Hamul boy who is in a medical coma after a tragic car accident, and learn how you can help. Then on Destination East County, we'll tell you about some top events coming up across our region, including Hawk Watch, concerts, a murder mystery play, and open house at a camel dairy. Now, if you're O positive or O negative blood type, the San Diego Blood Bank needs your blood. Hear how to donate on today's show. And from California News Service, learn about a new effort to reduce the number of girls behind bars. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The U.S. Department of Defense confirms that Iran launched air attacks Tuesday on two U.S. military bases in Iraq, housing American and coalition forces. Over a dozen missiles launched from Iran targeted the Al-Asad Air Base in Baghdad and a second base in Erbil. A video sent to media outlets, including ours, claims to show the attack on the base in Baghdad. Here is an excerpt of audio purportedly of the bombings. The attacks were in retaliation for the U.S. assassination of Iranian Major General Qasem Soleimani last week in Iraq, whom Defense Secretary Mark Esper has said was in Baghdad to coordinate attacks on U.S. forces and coalition partners. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has said Soleimani posed an imminent threat to Americans, but neither Esper nor Pompeo provided specific evidence of the threat. Soleimani had also been blamed for being behind prior deadly attacks by insurgents on American soldiers, as well as people in Syria and elsewhere in the Middle East. Critics have said that the killing of the Iranian commander via a drone strike violated international law by targeting a sovereign nation's military leadership. After the attacks on American bases in Iraq, President Donald Trump tweeted, "All is well." He indicated that there were no American casualties, though there are conflicting reports on whether any Iraqi casualties occurred. Trump also ramped up economic sanctions on Iran, but made efforts to de-escalate tensions, backing off any calls for a military response, indicating the U.S. does not wish to use the might of its military force. U.S. military bases and embassies around the world have been on high alert since the killing of Soleimani. A funeral for Soleimani in his hometown, Kerman, in Iran, reportedly drew millions of people, prompting a stampede in which 56 people died and over 200 were injured, the New York Times reports. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, Hussein Salami, vowed while in Kerman, "We will take revenge," adding that Iran will set ablaze places where Americans are located. Iran's parliament earlier this week passed a bill declaring the U.S. military's top leadership to be terrorists, subject to sanctions by Iran, the Iranian state media reported. President Trump on Wednesday called for more NATO involvement in the region. However, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg announced a temporary halt to training in Iraq of soldiers fighting terrorists, the New York Times reports. NATO had around 500 soldiers doing the training. Some NATO countries, including Canada, Germany, and Croatia, have announced withdrawal of troops from Iraq due to security concerns. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the top-ranked Democrat in Congress, tweeted after the attacks that she is closely monitoring the situation following bombings targeting U.S. troops in Iraq. She stated, "We must ensure the safety of our service members, including ending needless provocations from the administration and demanding that Iran cease its violence." Speaker Pelosi added that America and the world cannot afford war. But Defense Secretary Esper concluded, "We're not seeking war with Iran. What happens next depends on them." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The Iranian attacks on U.S. military bases in Iraq following the U.S. killing of Iranian General Soleimani has prompted heightened security at U.S. military bases around the world, including bases here in San Diego County. The U.S. has dispatched additional troops to the Mideast, including some stationed in the San Diego region. American actions in the Mideast have drawn mixed reactions here in San Diego's East County, which is home to many Middle Eastern immigrants. While some voiced relief at the death of Soleimani, others voiced disapproval at what some describe as President Trump's assassination order, and others say they are concerned about the potential for escalation of tensions, including military repercussions in their homeland. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter has officially announced that he will resign on January 13th. Hunter made the announcement in letters sent to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and to Governor Gavin Newsom. Hunter's District Chief of Staff, Michael Harrison, told us that services for constituents will not be interrupted. He says the office will remain open throughout a vacancy, no matter how long it may take. Constituents can continue contacting the office with any of their needs. Hunter's resignation letters cite his service first as a Marine combat veteran in Iraq and Afghanistan, and later in Congress, where he was elected in 2008 to fill the seat formerly held by his father, Duncan Hunter Sr. Congressman Hunter said he is most proud of giving a voice to men and women in uniform as a member of the House Armed Services Committee working to assure that war fighters had resources needed for their missions. His resignation letters conclude, "It has been an honor to serve the people of California's 50th District, and I greatly appreciate the trust they have put in me over these last 11 years." Hunter's letters made no mention of his guilty plea in December for conspiracy to spend campaign funds on personal use, nor being stripped of his voting rights because of that in a bipartisan vote by the House Ethics Committee. 10 candidates have filed to run for Hunter's seat in the March primary election. The top two will advance to a runoff in November, unless Governor Gavin Newsom decides to call a special election sooner to fill the vacancy. The contenders include 2 Democrats, 4 Republicans, 3 no-party preference candidates, and a Peace and Freedom Party member. Here's a look at how some of the major candidates' campaigns are taking shape. Amar Campanajar is the Democratic Party's endorsed candidate, who came within 3 percentage points of defeating Hunter back in 2018. He's been actively campaigning ever since then, amassing substantial funding. He's a Hummel resident who worked in the Obama White House and for the U.S. Department of Labor, as well as the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. In an email to media this week, he states, "Our campaign is full speed ahead and ready to take our working class, common sense, country over party messages to Congress. I actually live in this district, so as the only leading candidate who can actually vote in this race, I'm confident that we will outperform in the early phases of this election and go on to win the general election. I'll stack my lived working class experience against the other coastal elitist millionaire candidates any day." A second Democrat, Marissa Calderon, made a last-minute change of plans, switching from the 53rd congressional district to run instead in the 50th district after Hunter's guilty plea. She is the executive director of the National Association of Hispanic Real Estate Professionals, and she calls herself a national advocate for housing and immigration reform. Republican Darrell Issa, who retired from the 49th congressional district, has just released his first video ad for his campaign in the 50th district, which he does not live in. In the video, he denounces impeachment efforts against President Donald Trump as a liberal circus and claims he is the only candidate who can fight back against leftists like Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker. He cites investigations that he led into the Obama administration. Formerly the richest man in Congress, Issa has the means to largely self-fund his campaign. After the Union Tribune ran an article stating that Hunter will likely receive his pension despite his felony criminal conviction, Republican candidate Carl DeMaio, a former San Diego City Councilman and conservative radio talk show host who also does not live in the district, issued this press statement. "The fact that members of Congress have a pension to begin with, let alone still have one after pleading guilty to a felony, is an affront to the trust voters have put in their elected officials. Duncan Hunter should have been stripped of his pension along with any other benefits the second he pleaded guilty." DeMaio has come out with what he calls a 10-point Fix Congress First plan, which he says will force members of Congress to live under the same laws as the rest of us, including stripping them of the lavish pensions they receive today. State Senator Brian Jones, a Republican, has raked up an impressive list of endorsements, including the Deputy Sheriff's Association of San Diego County, San Diego and El Cajon Police Officers Associations, faith-based leaders, and over 40 elected officials, including the mayors of La Mesa and Santee, 8 local city council members, Assemblyman Randy Bopel, and former state senator Joel Anderson. On his website, Jones says he's the only candidate with roots in the district, at least among the Republicans. He's a proven conservative, with a track record and the ability to get things done, he says, adding, "I grew up here and have represented the people of this district as a Santee City Council member, state assemblyman, and now as a state senator." He notes he's been able to forge agreement across the aisle, sponsoring 26 bills enacted by the Democratic legislature and signed into law. And in Congress, Jones says he wants to be a reliable voice for the president's agenda, standing up for America's interests abroad, reducing regulations, building a strong military, reestablishing respect for law enforcement, and restoring traditional values that he says made our country great. Dr. Helen Horvath is an independent candidate who has been campaigning hard for months, including holding town hall meetings across the district. A military veteran with a psychology doctorate, she started her own business and has spent decades as a consultant to the federal government. She has made women's rights a cornerstone of her campaign, which also calls for fiscal responsibility, pulling planks from both Democratic and Republican platforms. Next up, Horvath will be participating in a community forum on women's rights, sponsored by the American Association of University Women in La Mesa. Other candidates who are latecomers to the race, but who also qualified for the ballot, include Jose Cortez, a Peace and Freedom Party member and community organizer, Lucinda Jan, a no-party preference candidate and entertainment industry professional, Henry Allen Ota, a no-party preference candidate who is also a farmer and loan officer, and finally, Nathan Wilkins, a Republican and Congressional Innovational Fellow.
The Cajon Valley Union School District has filed a countersuit against school board member Jill Bartow. The suit was filed in response to Bartow's federal lawsuit, which alleges violations of her civil rights and First Amendment rights. Bartow filed her complaint in late November, accusing the district, Superintendent David Miyashiro, and fellow board members of retaliating against her after she questioned hefty expenditures, including global travel by the superintendent and promotional videos. Bartow has served on the school board for over 25 years. In her campaign materials, she said, "My belief is that a school board should be answerable to taxpayers. The board should not be simply a rubber stamp committee, which it oftentimes is." The district's countersuit alleges that last year, the district received a complaint from an employee alleging that Bartow was harassing her and created a hostile work environment. The suit states that the board formed an ad hoc committee to investigate the employee's complaint. The countersuit further accuses Bartow of disclosing information learned during closed-door board sessions, taking district-owned supplies such as pens and batteries, and inaccurately reporting income. In addition, the district claims Bartow had a conflict of interest in agreeing to serve as a witness on behalf of people suing the district and appearing as an advocate for parents opposed to the district's position. Bartow told East County Magazine that the district's countersuit is retaliatory and without merit, adding that she looks forward to providing evidence in court. Bartow's suit alleges that her colleagues on the Cajon Valley Union School District have repeatedly tried to prevent her from fully representing her constituents. In 2018, Bartow defeated Andrew Alegria, the son of board member Joe Alegria, winning re-election by a whopping 69% to 31% of the vote. East County Magazine's investigation found that the district spent over $600,000 on promotional and marketing videos since Miyashiro became superintendent in July 2014. Most recently, Bartow questioned authorization of up to $21,000 for a New York producer to choreograph the district's flash mob video. Receipts provided by the district in response to its records request indicate that the district spent $10,000 for video production and editing of the 4-minute video on top of the cost for the choreographer. The district has failed to turn over all receipts in response to California Public Records Act requests. Bartow has stated that the district has also blocked requests for public records that she has submitted, including requests for recordings of meetings and information on agenda items. East County Magazine has twice had attorneys send cease and desist letters to the district, first for refusing to comply with timely public records requests for audio of public meetings, and second, for threatening to arrest this journalist for lawfully making audio recordings of public meetings. Videos and public records aren't the only issues in question. NBC San Diego recently reported that Superintendent Miyashiro has made 59 trips at a cost of $1.1 million since March of 2017, to destinations around the world. According to the district, these trips were largely to market its World of Work curriculum to other school districts. Bartow's federal civil rights lawsuit claims that after she voiced her concerns to local media and in public meetings over large expenses, Miyashiro and members of the board sought to deny her right to hold public office and serve her constituents. She alleges that the defendants took actions to chill or silence her from exercising her constitutional rights under the First Amendment. According to Bartow, the defendants banned her from speaking about district employees and prohibited her from attending closed-door board meetings and going to conferences. They also canceled her CalCard, a credit card for expenses, and prevented her from providing meaningful input to her constituents, according to Bartow's lawsuit. Separately from filing a countersuit, the district filed a motion seeking to dismiss Bartow's complaint. The district claims it can't be sued because the defendants are an arm of the state of California and are immune from a suit in federal court under the Constitution's 11th Amendment granting sovereign immunity. Bartow's attorneys, Michael Geary and Maria Severson, contend that the U.S. federal court is the correct venue for the lawsuit because Bartow had her federal constitutional and civil rights deprived by the district. The district's motion to dismiss Bartow's lawsuit is slated to be heard in federal court in San Diego on January 27th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Paul Cruz.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Health Report. Nearly 1,400 flu cases were reported in the week ending December 28th, the season's high to date and double the number of cases just 1 week earlier. Two more deaths also occurred, both men in their 70s with underlying medical conditions. Both of the victims died of influenza A, according to County Health and Human Services Agency. So far this season, 10 flu deaths have occurred and over 3,800 cases have been confirmed by lab testing. Emergency rooms at hospitals report 8% of all visits in late December were for flu-like illness. Dr. Thomas Coleman, acting county public health officer, says, "The significant jump in new cases indicates that influenza is widespread in the county, just like it is in the state and throughout most of the nation." He also offers condolences to families and friends of those who died of flu this year. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that everyone 6 months and older get a flu shot every year. It takes about 2 weeks for immunity to develop. Flu vaccination is especially important for people who are at high risk of developing serious complications from influenza. They include people with chronic medical conditions like asthma, diabetes, and lung disease, even if symptoms are under control, pregnant women, people aged 65 years and older, and people who live with or care for others who are at higher risk. In addition to getting vaccinated, people should also do the following to avoid getting sick. Wash hands thoroughly and often. Use hand sanitizers. Stay away from sick people. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean commonly touched surfaces. And if you are sick, stay home and avoid contact with others. The flu vaccine is available at doctor's offices and retail pharmacies. If you don't have medical insurance, you can go to a county public health center to get vaccinated. For a list of locations, visit sdiz.org or call 211 San Diego.
A new law making it harder for businesses to classify workers as independent contractors instead of employees took effect on January 1st. Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher, author of AB 5, says her bill aims to provide more workers with benefits such as health care, unemployment insurance, and the option to unionize. But a flurry of lawsuits have been filed challenging the measure as unfair and unconstitutional. Independent workers across a wide range of industries, ranging from freelance writers, musicians, and artists to truckers, translators, and hairdressers, have voiced alarm, saying the new law is costing them business, harming creativity, and their economic bottom line. Although the law stemmed from efforts to force ride-sharing services such as Uber and Lyft to pay minimum wage and other benefits to its workers, the law is so broad that it's impacting a wide range of workers across many industries, many of whom wish to stay independent. The bill comes on the heels of a related U.S. Supreme Court decision called Dynamex on another sweeping California-based law that many employers and workers were unaware of before news coverage of AB 5, but that also restricts the ability of companies to hire independent workers. Several industries are challenging AB 5 in court, with more suits likely to come. There's also the prospect of a ballot measure to limit or overturn the widely unpopular measure. On New Year's Eve, a federal judge issued a temporary injunction to halt implementation of the new AB 5 law, but only for independent truckers. That was in response to a suit filed by the California Trucking Association. U.S. District Judge Robert Benitez found truckers would be likely to suffer irreparable harm without the temporary injunction. He's considering a permanent injunction and indicated that the Truckers Association will likely win its argument, contending that the state law violates federal interstate commerce law. The ride-sharing service Uber and Postmates, a food delivery app-based service, have filed their own suit, along with two gig workers. Their suit claims the law is unconstitutional and that plaintiffs are defending their fundamental liberty to pursue their chosen work as independent service providers and technology companies in the on-demand economy. The suit accuses Gonzalez-Fletcher of overt bias and political favors in drafting the seemingly capricious law. The San Diego Assemblywoman, a Democrat, and former executive director of the San Diego Imperial County's labor law has been tone-deaf to critics, firing back against opponents of the new law, including many in her own party. The New York Times reports that Gonzalez-Fletcher stated, "Those who lose their jobs feel free to complain loudly, but that those who may benefit from the law by becoming employees are less apt to speak out." Perhaps the strongest case is one filed on behalf of freelance journalists and photographers by the American Society of Journalists and Authors and the National Press Photographers Association. Many freelance writers and photographers report losing substantial work already due to publishers dropping all use of freelancers rather than invest in the high cost of converting them to employees. Some out-of-state publishers are dropping all California freelancers due to AB 5. Journalists argue the law is an unconstitutional violation of the First Amendment, which guarantees freedom of the press and free speech. Milton Toby, head of the American Society of Journalists and Authors, says we have no choice but to go to court to protect the rights of independent writers and freelance journalists as a whole. The stakes are too high, and we cannot stand by as our members and our colleagues face ill-conceived and potentially career-ending legislation. The law has a hodgepodge of incongruous exemptions, including industries that have donated to support the Democratic Party or Gonzales Fletcher. Those exemptions include lawyers, doctors, grant writers, and other seemingly unrelated fields. There are some partial exceptions. Freelance writers and photographers can submit up to 35 submissions a year, but that's not practical for many, including weekly columnists who rely on reselling their works to many publications and would lose that right if they're forced to become employees, a potential violation of the copyright clause of the Constitution, which grants creators the rights to their works and specifies that only Congress has the power to regulate copyrights. There are workarounds to operate as a business-to-business venture instead of as an individual, but they put hefty financial burdens on freelancers, and this only applies if you're in the same general business as the company you're working for. A freelancer can form a limited liability corporation, but that costs about $800 every year. Or the independent contractor can form a sole proprietorship, which requires an annual business license in the city where they do business. Other potential costs include filing for a fictitious business name, publishing that information in local papers, and advertising the business as the bill requires, also opening a bank account, and tax filing obligations. AB 5 also appears to impose a virtually complete ban on freelance videography, a core function of the news industry. Smaller news sites that run video only on occasion tend to rely on freelancers to videotape things like political debates or other events, and they purchase freelance videos of breaking news, such as a plane crash, wildfire, or police shooting. Restricting news outlets' ability to buy freelancers' videos means restricting your right to know what is happening in your community and around the world. Industry experts say it's likely that AB 5 will be found unconstitutional as it applies to the news industry, the only industry granted constitutional protections. The freelance journalist lawsuit is slated for hearing right here in a San Diego courtroom on January 13th, and protests are anticipated. Converting a worker to employee status is also costly, since the employer must pay hundreds or even thousands of dollars per worker for unemployment insurance, workman's compensation, plus pay around 10% of whatever the worker earns for various other costs. There are higher accounting costs for payroll, withholding taxes and Social Security, and reporting to multiple agencies, costs that don't pencil out, particularly for smaller businesses which rely on numerous part-time workers, and for nonprofits such as our own media outlet that have no way to recoup such higher costs, since subscriptions are already free. While some companies may take advantage of gig workers to dodge minimum wage or health benefits granted to employees, many gig workers say they prefer the flexibility of being independent contractors, such as mothers of young children who want to set their own hours. Employees, by contrast, must work the hours that are set by the employer. Seniors with Medicare and workers who have health care policies through another job or a spouse's employment may have no need for such benefits and prefer the freedom from control by others found in independent contracting. Despite a statewide outcry, many protests and multiple lawsuits, Gonzales Fletcher remains staunch in her support of her new law. She recently told CBS News that she will not be issuing any proposed amendments to the law during the new legislative session, but will only offer clarifications that do little to ease the painful cost of AB 5 on millions of Californians. Uber, Lyft, and DoorDash aren't waiting on a legislative fix. These companies have stated that they plan to spend $90 million on a November ballot measure to restrict or possibly overturn the new law. Details are pending on that. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Crime Beat Report. Despite recent protests over the highly disproportionate percentage of sexually violent predators placed in rural East County, the Department of State Hospitals is proposing yet another. A hearing will be held February 3rd at 9 a.m. in San Diego Superior Court to determine whether Michael Polsom should be placed in Hakumba Hot Springs, a community of just 561 residents according to the 2010 census. The facility proposed has sheriff's deputies in residence. Polsom is diagnosed with pedophilia disorder. In 1985, he was convicted in Georgia of child molestation with two victims. In 1989, he was convicted in San Diego County of a lewd act on a child under 14. In 1995, he was convicted, again, locally for a lewd act with the fourth victim, also under 14, and served 15 years in prison. Prior to his release, the San Diego District Attorney's Office filed a petition to have Polsom civilly committed to a state hospital as a sexually violent predator. He was committed, underwent treatment, and petitioned for conditional release, which was opposed by both the hospital and San Diego's district attorney, or DA. But a year later, he again filed for release into the conditional release program for sex offenders, which the Department of State Hospitals supported over the objections of DA Summer Steffen. The public may submit comments between January 3rd and January 17th to be considered by the court. You can email comments to sdsafe@sdsheriff.org or call 858-495-3619. Comments will also be accepted at the hearing. Supervisor Diane Jacob called the proposed amendment outrageous and shameful. In a Facebook post, she wrote, "The state has already dumped 11 of these monsters in the same rural East County area. And a 12th predator, Thomas Joseph Cornwell, was just approved for placement there. Adding convicted pedophile Michael James Polsom is more proof that the state doesn't care about these quiet, family-oriented communities." Jacob opposes release of sexually violent predators, but says if they must be released, they should be housed on the grounds of Donovan State Prison, as has been done with some other predators.
The Alpine Union School District is warning parents about two separate incidents that occurred in the past week, both involving a driver in a truck approaching young students. On Tuesday, a vehicle described as a white lifted truck similar to a Toyota Tundra reportedly followed two young girls down a private dead-end road. Then on Thursday, a Joan McQueen Middle School student reported being approached by a stranger in a white, grayish four-door truck with tinted windows on Victoria Drive and Sneath Way in Alpine. A notice posted on the school's Facebook page by the district states, "We have met with the Alpine Sheriff's deputies and have requested extra patrols at our schools. The district is encouraging parents to talk to your children about ways to be safe and listed some best practices, including telling your children that if a stranger ever approaches and offers a ride or treats or asks for help with something like helping find a lost dog, your child should step away, firmly yell no, and run from the area immediately. Your child should always tell you or another trusted adult, such as a teacher or child care worker, what happened if they feel unsafe in a situation. Parents can call the Sheriff's Department at 619-659-2600 for more information or to report any similar incidents." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz. The La Mesa Police Department is seeking witnesses to a serious injury accident that occurred on Tuesday, January 7th, around 6:15 p.m. at the intersection of Grossmont Center Drive and Center Drive. Police also need help to identify the victim, a pedestrian in his 50s who was struck while crossing the street by a Nissan SUV. The victim suffered a compound fracture to his lower right leg and a fractured left hip, according to Lieutenant Brian Stoney. Unfortunately, he did not have any identification on him, and we have not been able to positively identify him at this time, he said. A preliminary investigation by police indicates that the pedestrian stepped off of the sidewalk into a marked crosswalk on Grossmont Center Drive heading east, Witnesses stated that the Do Not Walk signal was on. The driver, 41-year-old Brandon West of Poway, was making a right turn onto Grossmont Center Drive off of Center Drive when he struck the pedestrian in the roadway. Witnesses said the driver ran a red light when making the turn. West remained at the scene and was cooperative. Officers learned that he is on probation for several prior drug and alcohol-related arrests, including driving under the influence. He has been arrested for felony driving under the influence of drugs and causing serious bodily injury to the pedestrian struck in La Mesa. Officers provided first aid to the victim until paramedics arrived and transported the seriously injured patient to the hospital. Anyone with information on this accident is asked to call the La Mesa Police Department at 619-667-1400.
A man reported by a family member to be threatening suicide at a home on Camino de las Palmas in Lemon Grove was shot by three sheriff's deputies on January 6th. The shootings occurred after 34-year-old Shane Felix removed a revolver from inside his jacket, according to Lieutenant Michael Blevins, although Felix did not fire his weapon. He was treated at the scene for gunshot injuries and transported to a hospital. He underwent successful surgery and is expected to survive, according to Lieutenant Blevins. CBS 8 reports that Felix had a prior conviction for arson and is expected to be arrested for assault with deadly weapon and being a felon in possession of a firearm once he is medically cleared. The involved deputies were not injured. They have been identified as Deputy Lisa Krill, Deputy Casey Dow, and Deputy Matthew Poulin. All had been with the department for at least 5 years. Deputy Dow was involved in a prior officer-involved shooting in January 2019 inside the Del Taco on Broadway in Lemon Grove. In that incident, Dow and two other officers shot and killed a suspect who reportedly pointed a gun at the officers in the taco shop after they responded to a report of the man threatening a customer with a gun. Facts surrounding the most recent shooting remain under investigation. Anyone with information is asked to call the San Diego County Sheriff's Homicide Unit. You can also remain anonymous and call tips in to Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. If you or anyone you know is having suicidal thoughts, you can call the county's crisis hotline at 888-724-7240 or visit up2sd.org. That's up, the number 2sd.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ. This is Miriam Raftery.
Multiple lawsuits filed against the Catholic Diocese of San Diego and many local parishes in early January allege past childhood sexual abuse by several local priests, including at least three who served in East County. The litigation was filed on behalf of alleged victims previously unable to sue due to the statute of limitations. But a new law, AB 218, allows victims of child sexual abuse to file a lawsuit up to age 40. The previous limit was age 26. Victims have 3 years from January 1st of this year to take legal action. The alleged abuse occurred in the 1960s and 70s. All of the accused priests have since died. According to Erwin Zalkin, attorney for the plaintiffs, the diocese routinely moved priests accused of abuse, often to desert communities where he says they thought that the people there, mostly Hispanic, would not speak up. Zalkin has filed a half dozen suits so far, but says he plans to file as many as 60 more, the Ramona Sentinel reports. Priests who served in East County and are now posthumously accused of sexual abuse include Gregory Sheridan, who served in Ramona and other local parishes, Anthony Rorigue, who served in Lakeside, Poway, and several other locations around San Diego County, and Joseph Rossell, whose service included El Cajon. The diocese has offered settlements to plaintiffs of around $200,000 each from a victim's compensation fund set up last year, but Zalkin has rejected the amounts as an insult. Diocese Vice Chancellor Kevin Eckery released a statement denouncing actions of abusive priests as evil and urging victims to contact the church for counseling and compensation, which he indicated is available regardless of whether or not they pursue legal action. Eckery says the church has a moral obligation to provide assistance to any victim survivor of that abuse. The chancellor added that the church has implemented reforms that have resulted in no new abuse reports in nearly 20 years in the San Diego Catholic Diocese. Those reforms include mandatory safe environment training for clergy and all church workers, annual age-appropriate safety training for students in Catholic schools and religious education, enhanced criminal background checks, increased awareness and vigilance. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
A proposed ballot measure titled California's Compassionate Intervention aims to strike a balance between criminalizing homelessness, deemed by many as too harsh, and ignoring the impacts of crimes committed by homeless people on communities, an approach some see as too lenient. Mike Gatto, a Los Angeles attorney and former Democratic assemblyman, believes his initiative radically changes the state's approach to homelessness. The measure would treat some existing crimes as cries for help, according to Gatto, such as defecating on public transit or shooting up with heroin in a public place. It would require that laws against such crimes be strictly enforced, and in counties with 100,000 people or more, the law would create special courts to determine why crimes were committed. If crimes were committed due to economic need, it would result in the person being referred to shelters, financial help, medical assistance, and safety net programs. If the crime was due to drug use or alcohol addiction, the court would mandate rehab and treatment. Most controversial is the approach to mental illness. Treatment could include hospitalization or treatment in a confined setting such as a jail or prison mental health program for up to 1 year in some circumstances. After the person treated for any of these conditions fulfilled the court's requirements, his or her record could be expunged, so it would not affect the person's ability to get a job or go to school. However, this would not apply to felonies or repeat offenders subject to longer sentencing. The initiative language has been approved by the Attorney General's Office for petitions to circulate. The author must now collect about 620,000 signatures by May to qualify for the November ballot. A recent poll by 3M Research found that 90% of voters surveyed said homelessness is California's number one problem, and 73% of those polled indicated they would support Gatto's initiative. Pollster Chris Tapio said, "I've never seen 90% of the voters agree on anything," the San Francisco Chronicle reports. Many Californians have grown increasingly frustrated with the growing number of homeless on the streets, despite various attempts by municipalities to reduce homelessness. A recent Supreme Court action that let stand an appellate court ruling prohibiting cities from arresting homeless people sleeping on sidewalks or in public parks if shelter is not available has protected the rights of homeless individuals, but it also hampered law enforcement efforts to protect public health and safety. The measure does have opposition. The Western Center on Law and Poverty has voiced concern that the plan could, quote, take California back into the dark ages of mass institutionalization of people with perceived or real mental illness, unquote. The center also voices concern that it could lead to racial and class disparities in law enforcement. Cost of the program is another issue. The initiative calls for costs to be funded through the Millionaire's Tax initiative passed by voters back in 2014, diverting funds from other uses. Gatto also argues that costs of his measure would be largely offset by cost savings on expenditures cities and counties are currently making to combat homelessness through arrest, incarceration, street cleaning, and repeated hospitalizations of many chronically ill homeless people. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
SDG&E has begun construction to place power lines underground east of downtown Julian along a section of State Route 78 known as Banner Grade, as well as on Cape Horn Avenue. The project aims to reduce wildfire risk and allow key facilities to remain open during safety power shutoffs, according to a press release issued by SDG&E. The power utility says that, unlike overhead power lines, underground lines do not present a fire risk during high winds and elevated fire danger conditions. Julian's commercial downtown district is already served by underground power lines. As a result, SDG&E has been able to power Main Street businesses with a mobile generator during power shutoffs, but that hasn't helped nearby community facilities. Facilities that benefit from undergrounding work now being done include Julian's Post Office, High School, Elementary School, County Library, and the Cal Fire Station, as well as a County Public Works Maintenance Yard and a school bus yard. The Julian project will be completed in two phases over the next few months, though unforeseen weather conditions could affect the construction schedule. Motorists may experience traffic delays along Main Street, Banner Road, and Cape Horn Avenue during construction hours between 7 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. 7 days a week until completion. Traffic control will be in place to direct traffic in the area. Since the devastating 2007 firestorms, SDG&E has invested in undergrounding many lines as well as replacing many wood poles with fire-resistant steel poles. It has also built a sophisticated weather monitoring network and forged partnerships to enhance wildfire prevention and responses. Reporting for Eaves County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Paul Cruz.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
A 6-year-old Hamul boy is in a medically induced coma due to serious injuries suffered in a car accident that occurred on December 27th in Los Angeles with his father and two cousins. The boy's aunt, Brittany Judd, has organized a GoFundMe page called Help Eli Recover to assist the family of young Eli Ontiveros with his expensive medical care. According to the GoFundMe page, Eli suffered fractures to his clavicle, sternum, and 6 ribs. He also has damage to his lungs and brain. Right now, the goal is to get him off ventilation and to get him breathing on his own, according to his aunt. She describes her nephew as a kind, loving boy who started kindergarten at Hamul Elementary School this year and looked forward to starting T-ball in February. She says he loves being a big brother, always protecting and teaching his little sister. And she adds that Eli hopes to grow up to be a firefighter or a police officer. Her sister is a single mother, so every dollar is important. In addition, family members hope to locate bystanders who heroically saved Eli's life by rescuing him from a burning car after the crash. If you would like to help, you can donate at the Help Eli Recover page on GoFundMe. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This week's Destination East County features Hawkwatch and Ramona, concerts at the Magnolia in El Cajon, the silent movie Passion of Joan of Arc in Borrego Springs, and Open Farm Day at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming events, including San Diego Restaurant Week and Julian's Restaurant Month, trivia nights at Wineworks in La Mesa, tapas and a flamenco show at Space Bar Cafe in La Mesa, and a Lamplighters Theater production of Agatha Christie's murder mystery play, The Hollow.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Every Saturday in January and February, Hawk Watch will be presented at the Beegent Ranch in the Ramona Grasslands Preserve. The event starts at 10 a.m., but arrival at 9:30 is recommended. Hawk Watch is organized by the Wildlife Research Institute and includes up-close looks at falcons and other raptors with wildlife biologists in a seated show, as well as an option for later roadside observations along a 2-mile paved road, where you may see a variety of other birds of prey, including eagles. Volunteers with high-powered telescopes will be on hand to enhance your viewing enjoyment. For more information, visit wildlife-research.org/hawkwatch.
The Magnolia Center, formerly the East County Performing Arts Center, has a variety of shows coming up in the next few weeks. Upcoming performances include Angela Aguilar, the Alan Parsons Project, and country music singer Winona and the Big Noise. For tickets and the full lineup, you can visit MagnoliaSanDiego.com or The Magnolia on Facebook.
Borrego Performing Arts Center will present The Passion of Joan of Arc on Wednesday, January 15th from 7 to 9 p.m. The 1928 silent film will be accompanied by a live orchestra and choir, performing a haunting new score. Proceeds from this event will benefit the Borrego Springs Film Festival and the Borrego Springs Performing Arts Center. Find tickets at the Borrego Springs Performing Arts Center website.
Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to Open Farm Weekend on January 18th and 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. The Open Farm event features a live bird and animal show, camel encounter with treat feeding and petting, camel rides, a mini sheep town petting, and a gift shop with camel milk skin care products, camel milk chocolate, camel fiber products, and fun items for children. Details and directions are available at cameldairy.com.
San Diego Restaurant Week is coming up January 19th through the 26th, when participating restaurants across our region are offering special menus and discounts to dining patrons. In East County, there are several participating restaurants this year, including Five in La Mesa, Antica Trattoria, Bobo Kitchen and Garden, Casa de Pico, Farmer's Table, and Vine Cottage. Other inland eateries on the tour include Giardino Neighborhood Cucina in Lemon Grove, Terra American Bistro in San Diego, just one block west of La Mesa, and Blue Bohem in Kensington. Find more information on all of these dining options at sandiegorestaurantweek.com.
Not to be outdone, many restaurants in and around Julian are celebrating California Restaurant Month throughout January with their own specials and surprises. Participating mountain area restaurants include Colt's Burger Bar, Lake Cuyamaca Restaurant, Descanso Junction, Fat Anthony's, Heroes Restaurant, Jeremy's on the Hill, Julian Grill, Julian Tea and Cottage Arts, Miner's Diner, The Regulars Wanted Cafe, Winola Pizza and Bistro, and The Cooler. You can find details at visitjulian.com by clicking on the Restaurant Week link to view all of the delicious options.
El Monte County Park in Lakeside is a birding hotspot with an impressive array of birds. On February 1st, from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., you're invited to join Ranger Arnold, an experienced birder, to catch those winged creatures in action during an easy 2-hour walk through the park before the gates are open to the public. Binoculars and cameras are encouraged.
Wineworks in La Mesa invites you to test your knowledge, vie for prizes, enjoy some wine, and make new friends at trivia nights held each Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information on this event, you can visit lamesawineworks.com.
Space Bar Cafe in La Mesa is serving up Spanish-style tapas and sangria for happy hour starting at 6 p.m. each Thursday, followed by a flamenco show with live music from 7 to 9 p.m. For details and menu options, visit at spacebar.com.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present Agatha Christie's murder mystery, The Hollow, February 28th through March 29th. An unhappy game of romantic follow the leader explodes into murder one weekend at The Hollow. Dr. Christow, the Harley Street Lothario, is at the center of the trouble. When assembled all in one place, we find his wife, his mistress, his former lover, and other guests. As the list of romantic associations grows, so does the list of potential suspects when Dr. Christow is shot dead. Nearly everybody has a motive, but only one of them did the deed. Find tickets and details at lamplighterslamesa.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to the calendar, or you'd like to sponsor our Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show here on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
The San Diego Blood Bank has put out an urgent plea for both type O positive and O negative blood donors due to a shortage. David Wellis, the CEO of the blood bank, says, coming out of the holiday season, we typically see a decrease in donations of all types due to schools being out of session for the holidays and seasonal illnesses like the flu. But he adds the need for type O blood has hit a critically low level, and we need the community to help us keep a safe supply for local hospital patients. Type O positive, the most common blood type, is often needed for hospital patients. Type O negative, the universal donor blood type, can be given to any patient and is often used in emergency rooms when there is no time to test a patient's blood type. To be eligible to give blood, donors must be at least 17 years old, weigh at least 114 pounds, and be in generally good health. All eligible donors with type O positive or negative blood are encouraged to donate immediately to help save lives. The San Diego Blood Bank has a half dozen donor centers throughout San Diego County plus 10 blood mobiles, making it convenient to donate. Here in East County, the blood bank is located at 776 Arnell Avenue in El Cajon. You can get a full list of locations and make an appointment to give blood at sandiegobloodbank.org or by calling 1-800-4-MY-SDBB, as in San Diego Blood Bank. Walk-ins are also welcome. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A movement is afoot to reduce the number of teenage girls behind bars to zero. Led by a coalition of juvenile justice reform groups, judges, attorneys, and probation officers, Santa Clara County is one of five sites nationwide taking part in the initiative launched by the Vera Institute of Justice. Santa Clara Superior Court Judge Catherine Lucero is spearheading the effort to drill down on each young woman's case to find out what went wrong in her life and then see if the court can help. For example, with a safe place to live, transportation to school, or drug treatment.
Let's really individualize our approach to how we can get this young woman what she needs to be successful, instead of overwhelm her or make demands that aren't going to be achievable because of a situation at home.
The program takes into account issues such as structural racism and abuse that land a disproportionate number of girls of color and LGBTQ girls in the juvenile justice system. They are collecting the data to be able to analyze current practices and have begun training girls so they can speak out and help inform policy changes. Attorney Daria Larizadeh with the National Center for Youth Law says it's important to understand that sexual violence is a big driver of subsequent criminal behavior in girls. So providing safe places for girls to escape abuse will keep more of them off the streets.
Approximately 80% of girls in the juvenile justice system have experienced some form of sexual violence, whether at home or outside the home. And girls are over four times more likely to report having experienced some sort of sexual abuse than boys.
Lindsay Rosenthal with the Vera Institute of Justice says helping girls solve their problems is much more effective than simply locking them up.
It's an equity issue because girls, especially girls of color who are disproportionately impacted, have been left behind for so long in the juvenile justice system and have really specific needs that have been overlooked.
The program also combats the tendency of some law enforcement to keep girls in custody in order to keep them safe from abusive situations or sex trafficking. Instead, agencies are tasked with finding appropriate placements with family, friends, or a foster family. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia, and the Smashing Beats. Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.